Hello and welcome to the programme. You can visit the website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Did you know, listener, that ancient Egyptians had a very clever way of drawing people so you could see every part clearly? Sideways heads, front-facing eyes, twisted torsos and marching legs. And thousands of years later, all the old paintings on the tombs, they do the sand dance, don't you know?
All the old paintings on the tomb, they do the sand dance, don't you know? If they move too quick, go ayo, they're falling down like a domino. All the bazaar men by the Nile, they got the money on a bet. Gold crocodiles, ayo, they snap the teeth on your cigarette. Foreign types with the hookah pipes, ayo, 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 ayo. Walk like an Egyptian.
Oh, I know it's not the Bangles, but it's a better version of Walk Like an Egyptian. Why are we talking about that? Let's find out. Richard Collins, where are you?
In Malahide in North County, Dublin.
And Niall Hatch, where are you?
Somewhere a bit different. I'm on a place called Crocodile Island in Luxor on the River Nile in Egypt.
Oh my goodness, you're normally in Greystones in County Wicklow. What's happened?
I fancied a change of scene, Derek. No, just over here in Egypt on holidays. Wanted to do a bit of bird watching. Wanted to see some of the magnificent wonders of this great country. It's somewhere I've always wanted to go to ever since I was a small kid, learning all about Tutankhamun and Ramesses and everybody in classical studies in school. And I went to the Valley of the Kings today and actually was in Tutankhamun's tomb and went and explored there. It's absolutely stunning. I've been travelling around Egypt now for the last week or so. Started off in the Sinai Peninsula, the Asian part of Egypt, and went up to Sharm el-Sheikh and up to a place called St. Catherine, climbed Mount Sinai, which was an amazing thing, where Moses got the Ten Commandments from God, and then went to Cairo and explored the pyramids and the museums, and I'm now down in Luxor. It's incredible.
Now, Richard, you've been in Egypt, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I started from the other end, Abu Simbel, which is up towards the Sudan border, and I moved down and I went on a boat across Lake Nasser, which is an enormous reservoir. It took 3 days to cross it. Wonderful things to see all along, and then the Aswan Dam, and then you go below that and then more temples all the way down to Cairo.
Now, Niall, you say you're on Crocodile Island. Presumably there are a lot of crocodiles there.
There are no crocodiles here anymore in this area of Egypt, at least. Though there are plenty of them depicted on the walls of the tombs today when I was in the Valley of the Kings. So obviously it was a creature that people were very familiar with. The Nile crocodile is found throughout Africa, though. I have seen them before in South Africa. That's quite a widespread species throughout the continent. But I think from this part, given all the human disturbance and all of that here, I think they've been extirpated from this area. Bearing in mind, of course, that Egypt is a massive country with a very dense population crammed in just along the river. So big on the map, but so much of that is concentrated along the River Nile, which is the lifeblood of this entire country. It was amazing seeing Cairo particularly, which a lot of people don't realise is the largest city in all of Africa. So that was an eye-opener to me. I was glad to say, I rented a car when I was in Sinai. That was fine driving there. I would never in a million years consider driving in Cairo. I have never seen anything like it. You take your life into your hands driving there, I would say. So better just take taxis and leave it to the people who know what they're doing. But then travelling on the river itself is now much more sedate and calm going on the boats. I much prefer that.
And are you meeting many people? And when you tell them your name is Niall, they must have a little giggle to themselves.
They do. It is quite funny. So one of the things people will ask you here, they'll put out their hand and say, I'm Mohammed or Ahmed or whoever. What's your name? And I'll say, I'm Niall. And they sort of look at me like I'm joking, or they laugh or whatever, because, yeah, the river and I share, well, not the same spelling, of course, but the same sound. It is quite funny. It is an icebreaker with a lot of people. A lot of people remember it now.
What's the origins of the River Nile? Do you know?
Well, I was looking into this, and the answer, as is so often the case, is there's lots of disputed theories, so nobody's quite sure. Some people claim that it's actually from an old Egyptian word just meaning the river, because the Nile was the river. There was no other river comparable. It was like the life blood of the entire nation, and therefore the entire world for the ancient Egyptians. Others, it was actually said it might be from actually an even more ancient culture. It's a corruption, perhaps, of the name of one of their gods, but nobody is quite sure.
Yes, there were something like 10,000 crocodiles in Lake Nasser, the great reservoir. But you didn't see them. You did see them in a funny way. These Nubian characters dressed out in beautiful white robes would approach you because you were a tourist, and they'd be holding a crocodile, a small one, taped up so it couldn't bite you, hoping that you would take your photograph with them. But they were the only ones I saw. They have never gone south. I don't think they've ever gone south of the Great Dam, the Aswan Dam. And the other one that's gone now was the hippo. The hippo used to be there and used to be down below the dam in the old days, but that has gone too. But there's lots of other things there to compensate.
It is amazing when you're looking at the paintings on the tombs and all of the different icons and everything that they have in the museums, when you see just how important animals were to the ancient Egyptians, be it in the heads of some of their gods. You see like Horus, the falcon-headed god, Anubis, the jackal-headed god. There's also the cat-headed god. There's the ibis, there's Thoth, the ibis-headed god. But then also in the hieroglyphs themselves, there's so many different birds and recognisable species as well. You can see Egyptian vulture and barn owl, and there are actually hieroglyphs within their written language. It's absolutely astonishing to see that, and the intricate detail in which they're rendered. Some of these people would be good field guide artists today. Some of the illustrations of these birds are perfect. They're absolutely stunning, and to see them going back, you know, several thousand years, and they observe those details so finely, it's really impressive.
Have you seen the Nile sunbird? This is the most beautiful little bird, one of the most beautiful ones I have ever seen, and it is quite tame. It doesn't get frightened when you approach it. It's a lovely little creature, beautifully coloured, and it lives along the Nile.
I have, Richard. I saw my very first ones in my whole life just this morning. It's the one that I really wanted to see. Of all the birds here, that's was the top of my list. I opened the door in this little hotel bungalow that I'm staying in at dawn this morning, and there were about 20 of them in the flowering tree right outside the front door. Absolutely stunning little bird. The sunbirds, they kind of take the role of the hummingbirds in the old world. They don't hover like hummingbirds, but they do the other things of hummingbirds. So they feed on nectar, they pollinate plants, and the males in particular tend to be very, very brightly coloured. And the Nile Valley sunbird is an absolute stunner. The male, he has this lovely metallic blue head and chest, this bright, bright yellow chest, and this really, really long streamer tail behind him. Still a very dinky little bird with this big, long tail attached behind him. The female, as is so often the case, unfortunately, she is much, much drabber, short tail, sort of more muted, sort of dusty, kind of brownish yellow, but a stunning little bird. And I saw Egypt's other sunbird a few days ago when I was in Sinai as well, the Asian part of Egypt. I saw the Palestine sunbird, which is the male. He's all dark iridescent blue with a long curved beak. Absolute avies. And actually, they do kind of spoil the other birds for you. Once you see a sunbird, you realise the other birds just really, really aren't up to it. They're just such stunning looking birds. Amazing, actually, that you don't see them depicted in the tombs, because I would have thought that the ancient Egyptians would have been struck by just how beautiful this bird was. You see the hoopoe, as you said, Richard, many of the other colourful species, but not the Nile Valley sunbird for some reason, as far as I'm aware.
I suppose it's too dark. It looks almost black, the Palestine sunbird. It doesn't evoke the spirituality of the other ones, the normal creatures that they love in Egypt, the cats and so forth.
Speaking of spirituality, Niall, I take it that's the call to prayer which is happening behind you. As we record this, it's 6:32 Irish time, so that's about 7:32 Egyptian time.
That's right, there's only an hour time difference at the moment, because in Ireland our clocks change there at the end of March, but Egypt won't change its clocks until the end of April. So normally it's 2 hours time difference, but at this moment, for a brief period of about a month, we're just an hour different from Egypt, and that is indeed the call to prayer. There are several mosques around this area. Egypt, of course, is predominantly a Muslim country. There are other faiths here as well too, including a famous Christian community here too, but the majority of people here are Muslim, and there are mosques everywhere, and you hear this wonderful call to prayer. It actually is a very beautiful, evocative sound, and you hear this five times a day, so it's happening right now. You can hear it there.
Describe the scene where you are.
Right now, I am sitting in sort of in front of my little bungalow on this place called Crocodile Island. In front of me, I can see just across the lights of Luxor, just off the island. It's connected by a bridge to the mainland. We're right in the middle of the River Nile here. I see what look like reed beds around me. They're actually papyrus beds. Lots of papyrus growing here. Famous, of course, the plant that the Egyptians and other cultures used to make a type of paper from and they wrote on. But it's a reed-type plant, and there's many different species of bird and and fish and so on that live in there. So it's a great habitat. And then around there, you see the River Nile slowly flowing past. There are several fishing boats going up and down, and you also see some of these cruise boats going up and down. The Nile cruise is a big deal. You see a lot of these ships going up and down the river. It's again, the lifeblood of the whole area. Everything about Egypt really is centered around this great river. It's one of the longest rivers in the entire world. The debate's still open on that. It was long believed that the Nile was the longest river in the world. Some people now claim that the Amazon, including one of its tributaries, may just pip it. We're not quite sure, but either way, it's still a vast river. And to actually be able to sit there right now watching it as I'm speaking to you, seeing black-crowned night herons just there. I see them now flying around in the papyrus. It's really very evocative, with this call to prayer all around me. Nice balmy evening. Very hot during the day, but when the sun goes down, it goes cool quite rapidly. So you need a jumper here at night, but then in the daytime you're absolutely baking. So a wonderful place, I have to say. I'm really enamoured with Egypt. I'm really glad I came here.
Oh, we're all very envious, aren't we, Rich?
Yes, indeed. I'd love to go back there. I wonder, have they done anything about the terrible silt problem? It seemed a great idea to put this big dam in, and it increased the amount of agricultural land by something like 30%. But unfortunately, the silt that used to come down that inspired the entire civilization is trapped above the dam. So they've been putting in artificial fertilizers to compensate. But that's not such a good idea, because the land is getting salty, or at least it was. And there were all kinds of projects being thought about, shipping silt from above the dam down south of the dam. Had there been any developments in that direction since?
I think there's lots of engineering work going to try and rectify that. But I think in many ways it's always going to be an insurmountable problem. I don't think they'll ever find a complete solution for it. When the dam was constructed and Lake Nasser was flooded, this big valley, you mentioned Abu Simbel, they had to move the entire temple and to stop it being flooded, which is a major feat of engineering in itself. But what it did was, it for the first time in thousands of years, it prevented the seasonal flooding of the Nile that used to happen. So just as I spoke there, fox just ran past the door here, Derek. Hadn't expected to see that. red fox, as far as I could tell.
An Egyptian fox. Ooh, I can see it now. I can visualise it.
So that seasonal flooding of the Nile since the 1960s, that has stopped. It had bigger impacts on agriculture, particularly in the delta up around Alexandria, where the Nile meets the Mediterranean. And that had a big effect on many wetland bird and amphibian and plant species as well, because those seasonal flood systems in the Nile are no more, or certainly far less than what they used to be. That silt that used to wash up and fertilise the land, that is no more as well in most areas, and that has had a big impact. So progress in some ways, a huge amount of electricity generated by this dam, but also it's had a big impact on the agriculture and on the wildlife as well. So there's swings and roundabouts, I suppose, in terms of progress.
They could take a leaf out of the sunbird's book, because it is a very symbiotic bird. It feeds on flowers, the nectar the flowers offer, but it spreads the pollen. So they both benefit. So that is an ideal image for ecology, and it would be great if we could do the same with the river itself. The river is full of fish, by the way. In that part of the world, it's what's under the water that's very interesting. The same with the Red Sea. There's over 1,000
yes.
species in the Red Sea. Above it, it's an arid wasteland, lunar landscape most of the time. But inside in the water, there's the Nile perch in the Nasser Lake can be bigger than a man, I'm told. I didn't see one, so I can't verify that. And you get these claims, which sometimes are exaggerated, but no doubt it is a very big fish.
Oh, I'm definitely going to have to go there someday.